I sat down to finally read this chapter today. It was a big moment to finally reach this fated conclusion. I don't know how it felt for you, Eric.
Yeah, it's to be reading this, to understand now what sort of all the hushed rooms conversations were about, you know, this isn't in the show, we were expecting this, what's going on. Now it's all abundantly clear. And honestly, I think reading this now, I've often said that this whole on-season reading has come at like a really good time between these seasons of the TV show. I don't know. I love how this timeline sort of for us, our own journey at slowly becoming more sullied, has reached its peak here now.
Wait a second. Are we actually recording the show right now?
I wasn't sure.
We didn't clap, so I didn't think we were.
We could do one more proper. We could say welcome, all that stuff. But I don't know. I kind of...
Welcome to the most smoothly introduced episode of Game of Owns.
Ever?
Ever.
Ever.
It is finally here. For those of you listening that have been with us for years, for Micah, have been with us.
Poor Micah.
For Micah.
Oh, that was a great joke, Eric. I've never heard that one ever before.
I'd be surprised if you had.
We're finally here. We can talk about it.
Yeah. You know, wait for it. I've been thinking about this the whole day. Mm-hmm. Guys, the cat's out of the bag.
Don't you mean pond? She's out of the pond.
The river.
I just want to say thank you to everyone who has stuck with us and has not spoiled us for the lifetime of our show. I think this is our 308th episode.
Mm-hmm. That it is.
There have been a lot of hills and valleys. I'm waving my hand in the air during the course of our podcast.
And rivers.
And rivers. I didn't want to be too on
streams.
The nose.
And ponds.
Sorry.
But this was... Apart from what you just spoke about, Micah, and I guess just for all of you listening, this is the service for our podcast and for the sake of our conversation, because we didn't even have a pre-show discussion. We worked out a few technical issues, and then just like you heard, immediately just decided to start talking about this because it was literally too much. This chapter had to be, apart from the sensation, was it not one of your favorite chapters?
Yes. And mostly for its point of view character.
Do you want to know a funny story about this?
Yes.
I had a friend who I let borrow this book, and he started reading the epilogue, and he thought that it wouldn't matter, so he just skipped it. He read like two pages and then was like, oh, I don't need to know anything else that happened in this chapter. Comes back to work the next day, and I can't wait to talk about it. And I was like, can you believe what happened at the end of that chapter? He's like, it was just a rando. Like, I didn't need to read that. I made him read it on the spot.
I absolutely love this. I thought it was just a way to... wrap up everything that we've gone through. These last handful of chapters have been insane, you know? They've been almost too much. And I thought, okay, this is a very friendly release from all of the tension we've been feeling, George R. R. Martin. This doesn't seem like you. We left John approaching the king. We left Sansa just about to lie for Peter and say that Marillion shoved Lady Lysa out of the window. And then we get a jaunt toward Old Stones with Merritt Frey, the guy with a drinking problem and a checkered past.
Just a headache.
Yeah.
It was funny because throughout the chapter, I was like, oh man, his head is pounding. I really feel for this guy. Oh man, this guy has sort of a drinking problem. I kind of relate to this guy. And then he's like, I wanted to diagnose. I was like, man, is the headache because he drinks? Like I was like getting inside. I was like, I really want to get to the bottom of this. And then it turns out it doesn't really matter. Although the questions were answered. Like, this is a perfect microcosm of if you would ever want to get new people into this series, I would say this would be a great chapter for it. Although, because of the spoiler of the reveal at the end,
we can talk about it, Eric. We can
recommend
talk
this
about
chapter.
It
yeah, I know it's difficult to actually be able to talk about this. But no, the reveal at the end is like, okay, I probably wouldn't. You know, the series prologue in Game of Thrones works just as well at like giving you an example of someone's backstory of being inside someone's head. They have a purpose. They have what they consider to be their values or their interests, but then it just gets completely cut in half or hanged or whatever by the machinations of what the magic and the plot in this world is doing.
To finally, at the end of this book, with all these epic events that have taken place throughout A Storm of Swords, to be inside the mind of a Frey and to get the unique perspective as to the family dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
Their family is really no different than any of the other families that we have come to know.
That's true.
In this story. You know, there's the power struggle. Different family members don't like each other. So there, it's no different than the Lannisters or the Starks. Maybe we don't like the phrase as much, but the chapter is still one of those chapters where at moments you sympathize. Eric, you mentioned maybe not the drinking is not the best
headaches,
example.
The headaches, right? You're just like, oh man, I feel bad for this guy.
Yeah, and everything that he's gone through, right? His life has not been the best. He's had ups and downs just like anybody else. And he faces a pretty big task in front of him. And much like other characters that we've seen in this series, he's just trying to please his father.
I feel for all of you listening that are screaming at your podcast device saying, I've waited this long and you're still not talking about her.
She's such a small part of the chapter, though.
Yeah, we got to make the slow build.
I love
it. We didn't know there was this loose end to be tied up, right? The Red Wedding came and hurt us. But there's been so much since then. Since we picked this book back up again in this on season, there's been so much to take our minds off or sort of distract us. Of course, it's a natural progression of plot. The characters have moved on. But George is just like, wait a minute, you know, in the same book where this happened, there's one more thing that I want to say about what happened, which is that it's not been forgotten, that karma is a bitch, and the phrase don't necessarily get off scot-free. Without this epilogue, I wonder how different the perception would have been on the phrase as a house in the intervening years, you know, between this book and the next, because they really seem to get away more or less scot-free. They've taken over the Riverlands. Sure, there's fighting, but after what they did, you expect to see some justice, and no, the Starks and nobody else is really in capacity to exact that justice. But then finally you get that in this chapter and you're like, holy shit.
The way that this chapter opens, though, it reminded me a lot of Arya as she was approaching the twins, because here you have Merit Frey, who is taking the road up to Old Stones, but yet it is foreboding, much like Arya's experience and even Catelyn's experience, right, prior to arriving at the Twins as well. We spent so many episodes talking about just the ominous nature that was building around their arrival.
The approach.
And he's experiencing, not as intense, but he's noting that there's snow in autumn in the Riverlands. It's not natural. He feels as if it's a bad omen that he's coming upon as he's making his way to meet up with these outlaws, where he's trying to ransom back his great nephew, Peter Pimple, right? And you do, throughout the course of this chapter, get a sense for how the Frey family functions or fails to function, depending on how you want to look at it. And for me, reading about a character like Merit Frey, it's very reminiscent of other characters that we had the opportunity to read from their perspectives throughout the course of the series. And there's one paragraph in particular where it says, you needed some sort of distinction in the twins, else they were liable to forget you were alive. But a reputation as the biggest drinker in the castle had done little to enhance his prospects, he'd found. Besides, my wife is a shrew, my father despises me, my children are worthless. What do I have to stay sober for? It almost reminds me of Tyrion in a way, like that kind of mentality, like how he's thinking in his internal monologue.
Mm-hmm. I thought that this man was an incredible tool for the story. I thought that the way that George led us into what we find in the final page, I just can't find the words to compliment it enough, because this has been a very dangerous journey. We keep saying lots of highs and lows, but the emotions have pulled us all over the place. And yet we find ourselves in the first epilogue. After the prologue and now finding this epilogue, these are very, very crucial, very important moments in A Song of Ice and Fire. We get magic. We get this fate that's eventually going to come upon us, murdering a member of the Night's Watch in the prologue. And now we have this. It's so innocent. So innocent, the way that we're led into this moment. I'm just thinking of how it must have felt to know you were writing such an important thing. And I'm not speaking about Lady Catelyn being brought back from the dead, because we've seen that technology before. I'm speaking about the bringing our senses back to the Red Wedding, and bringing our senses back to people like Tom Sevenstreams and Lemoncloak, and feeling the camaraderie felt, and it feels like so long ago in our podcast, because it was such a long time ago. We started this journey after season 4, and I know a lot of you listening maybe thought to yourselves, this is going to be a slow burn. I can't wait till we get to the fourth and fifth books so the podcast can really catch up to where we are in the world and the rest of you, Sullied. But for this, I'm thankful that we're talking about what we're talking about now. Like you said, Eric, this feels like a really appropriate time. And this chapter came at the perfect moment for me because I feel so connected to the rest of the book. And that's great because for us doing this podcast and for all of you listening, we've been going through all of this together for a very long time. And it's been a lot of work and it's been a lot of conversations and it's been a lot of attention and it's been a lot of details. And we get to feel this kind of joyride, this slow stroll with Merritt Frey as he approaches outlaws that we have this sort of friendship with. And we can kind of guess that it would be them. And eventually we do know it's them after we hear little bits in there. And it's just hard to see someone leave us like he does at the end of the chapter because we do, like you said, Eric, understand who he is from his interactions with his family and how it's a bummer he squired beside Jaime Lannister and shook out the way he did. He would have never lived up to that man. No. Life is so treacherous and it is so simple. And that quote that you read, Micah, I just thought illustrated that beautifully. It was just a subtle reminder by George R. R. Martin that doesn't all really matter anyway. He says, the gods took that away from me. This is talking about his journey to be a knight. Why shouldn't I have a cup of wine from time to time? He's become a heavy drinker. It helps my headaches. Besides, my wife is a shrew. My father despises me. My children are worthless. What do I have to be sober for? What does this man have to live for, right? Mm-hmm. In an age where life is so easily, they're around death so much more than we are in the story, and he writes it. So they're so familiar with death and the idea of leaving that it's just not, it's not a big deal to them, you know? They don't stress out about it as much as we do. They can do something like the Red Wedding. He can be there and drink alongside those in the Red Wedding and walk away from it. And this chapter is really painting the world one last time before he writes another story for the next few years. It's like he knew this would be one good long last reminder, and then Lady Catelyn returns.
Yeah. And yeah, he's trying to prove himself, wow, though, too. That's the whole reason why he's on this mission. And I know that I alluded to this before, but it's not unlike other characters trying to prove themselves in their father's eyes. It's very much reminiscent of things that we've seen transpire throughout the course of this series, and just the overall power struggle that is going to take place, at least in Merritt's eyes, once Walder Frey passes on. You know, he makes mention of the fact that his father was querulous and stubborn with an iron will and a wasp's tongue, but he did believe in taking care of his own. And to me, that was almost reminiscent of Tywin. You know, despite the deep-seated distaste he had for Tyrion many times throughout this series, he was always, always willing to take care of his own because Tyrion was his blood and was his son. Now, in the end, it didn't really work out the best for those two, but we saw many moments like that. You know, you are my son. Like, he says that, when he makes him Hand of the King. So it's not unlike what we've seen in other families that we've come to know extremely well throughout A Song of Ice and Fire.
And it's also kind of a reminder that there are other people in this world who are feeling the ramification of other people's decisions and of the decisions of their families and this war that's happening who aren't really involved. I mean, obviously he's part of the Red Wedding. He had a role to play, but is what number son is he, like 8 or 9?
Nine.
He's nine. And so, you know, these people who are just trying to prove themselves a little bit or not get killed, or, you know, how there's so many people who are collateral damage. And it's something that we've talked about in other chapters when we've come across non point of view characters. And I think it's an interesting reminder that this world is a lot bigger than I think we sometimes realize when we are in the heads of our usual cast.
I find myself sort of overlooking the phrase, but I feel so much more well-informed of the nature of these houses in Westeros because I know that we can use our intuition and gather that they differ in so many ways. But to get this inside info on Walder Frey after the fact, after we've sort of decided our hatred from now until the end of days, is so interesting. When you think of the twins and how much it will change when he passes away, the fact that he's housing his extended family all the way down to his ninth son and more in his fortress, basically.
And wasn't he the one who called them, he referred to his kids as like belly squirts or something terrible, like in front of Catelyn? And I'm just like, he doesn't care about these people. There's so many and they all want to impress him. And it's a weird insight into how loyalty and blood works. It's crazy.
And the horse ride and being scared of the woods. I really felt the forest. I felt
the squirrel.
I felt the squirrel.
Just felt the squirrel. I felt the squirrel too.
I thought it might have been a wolf. I was like, yes, but it wasn't. I thought it could have been many things. But I felt the environment. When we entered Old Stones and went under the archway, and the grass was waist high, and he was playing his tune. I felt that scene, and oh my god, how beautiful would that have been in the show? If this would have happened, and maybe it will, I'm not sure, but the approach, you're sitting on a king, and then that immediate immersion into the past. George is doing it to us yet again in this chapter, where we're feeling the modern environment and the mind of someone who has troubles with a current family. We hear of Tristopher from the days of old, and immediately our mind subconsciously reminds us, okay, this is an aged story, and then we can remember the threat, and then we can remember what he's actually there for. And it's just all of it being together in this one rich moment is so great, because we're not really anchored to the point of view of a character that we've been with for a long time. So it's kind of a fresh approach to the same story.
Mm-hmm. I do feel like a chapter like this is almost a present from George R. R. Martin to those of us who have been paying attention. And like Zach was saying earlier, these books are hard work. I mean, it takes effort to read this. You can't casually skim and really get the whole effect. And so I think that as a slow reveal of why he's important kind of comes to the forefront, it's a gift to those of us who have been paying attention, and it makes it that much more special because we understand how all these little pieces are coming together before a big reveal.
Yeah.
And if we recall earlier on in this book, we had a Catelyn chapter where they were at this very place, right, as they're making their way to the twins. So it's very symbolic that we come back here in the epilogue, and it's one of the Freys who are approaching and have to inevitably face off with Catelyn again and pay for what it is that his family was ultimately responsible for. Even if he was just the guy who was supposed to get the Great John drunk, he's still culpable and responsible.
He didn't even do it right.
What was it? He had enough wine to kill 3 grown men, but the Great John was still at the sign of danger, able to snap a sword out of a guy's hand so hard he broke his arm.
And he even killed someone.
He killed a guy. It took 8 men to chain this guy up, which Great John later on. Please.
I think he's lined up for a couple owns for sure.
We know he's alive, which is huge.
But Merritt's sort of gradual, like what you were just saying, Hannah, like the reveal again of who he is. He starts out at the beginning of the chapter. He's like, he's the ninth son. We get he was a squire, but he's almost a knight, but he was injured. He barely got arranged to a good marriage sort of thing. And he's got these kids But we find out, oh my gosh, he turns out to be basically the father-in-law of Roose Bolton, because Roose Bolton married
Walda,
his useless daughter, his glutton daughter, Walda. And even though that has, again, nothing to do with Merritt. It has nothing to do with who the hell this guy, like what this guy brings to the table. It's just that he's that guy and he's a Frey, and a Frey is what the crew here needs, and they're searching for, I guess they're searching for Arya.
We're looking for a dog. He's got a child with him. Could be a boy, could be a girl. I feel bad for Merritt, Eric, because of course Hannah and Micah, you guys knew, and everyone who's listening, you guys already knew, and maybe we should have known, and maybe you knew, Eric, before we even got to the end of this chapter. But if this Frey was riding to meet the outlaws that we're accustomed to, and he did mention this isn't the Kingswood and this isn't the old Brotherhood, which I can only assume they were even better organized, that he would possibly be met by Lord Beric's band of brigands. So if we were to meet with that band of outlaws, if those were the people that have Peter that he would need to exchange 100 golden dragons for, it didn't even cross my mind, not once, that he would be murdered by them immediately, automatically, because he was a Frey. And we know that they have harsh allegiance to the old ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't even consider that. But of course, there's no way you're walking out of this, ninth son of Walder Frey.
But he didn't consider it either. Obviously, no. What is it that he says? I mean, he says, I'm a Frey. You're not going to kill me, essentially.
Too bad.
And then the last of his courage run down his leg as Rogar Martin.
Oh, God.
Yeah, can't blame him for that.
Yeah. Nope. Same.
You have to read this chapter. I knew that it was going to have a big reveal, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't know it was going to be, I would get this many feels out of it. And when the moment came, can I just read it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I just
do.
Need to go there. I swear to you, and I'm feeling it right now, and that is not a joke. When this moment came, I noted, I'm getting feels right now. You know when you feel the feels coming?
Get the goose pimples.
Yeah, the goose flesh. I felt the feels, and I'm going to feel them right now. He says that there is no witness to his involvement with the Red Wedding, and the singer says this. As it happens, you're wrong there, the singer turned to the hooded woman. Milady. The outlaws parted as she came forward, saying no word. When she lowered her hood, something tightened inside Merritt's chest, and for a moment he could not breathe. No, no, I saw her die. She was dead for a day and a night before they stripped her naked and threw her body in the river. Raymond opened her throat from ear to ear. She was dead. Her cloak and collar hid the gash his brother's blade had made, but her face was even worse than he remembered. The flesh had gone pudding soft in the water and turned the color of curdled milk. Half her hair was gone, and the rest had turned as white and brittle as a crone's. Beneath her ravaged scalp, her face was shredded skin and black blood, where she had raked herself with her nails. But her eyes were the most terrible thing. Her eyes saw them. What is what?
What?
I think it's great that he points out how dead she was.
Yeah.
She was dead for a day and a night. We saw her through Arya, and who knows how long she'd been in the river at that point before she was pulled out.
Months.
So not only has she been dead, she's been dead and decomposing for probably a week before she came back, and it's to see her physical state reflected as such, and she is still up and quote-unquote alive is crazy.
And we saw with Beric Dondarrion, as he would continue to be brought back to life, he would lose more and more of himself every time.
But those were his words on it. And to continue this quote that Zach was reading so aptly, "She don't speak," said the big man in the yellow cloak. "You bloody bastards cut her throat too deep for that, but she remembers."
Everyone listening at home, Catelyn Stark is back. She's alive.
Yeah.
Baby.
But the real question is, what does she remember? How much does she remember? How much of herself is she still really? Because you know, we've heard Beric Dondarrion even say earlier on in this book that every time he comes back, he's not the same as he used to be. We see the hatred in her eyes, right, that's reflected back at Merritt. Mm. But that's normal to me. I mean, you would expect the hatred because of what she's been through. So there's a lot to take in here. But the fact of the matter is that Lady Catelyn is back, and she is alive, and we leave a Storm of Swords with that fact, and we don't know what is to come in these next couple of books. What is her true purpose going to be with the Brotherhood? You know, they're clearly in search of Arya and the Hound, and what now? It's just like you're left with just more questions than you.
Why isn't this in the show?
Well, that's a great
that's
question.
My question.
Starks, for so long, there have been fewer and fewer of those. It's nice to get one back.
To get one back.
just get one back. Like,
HBO, David and Dan, why isn't this in the show? Why isn't this in the show?
I think that it's a cool reveal, but I don't know if at this point it necessarily advances the plot, and so I can almost see why it was cut.
Boo.
I mean, the fact that Rob, Arya, Sansa, Rickon, Bran.
I do wonder now that we know we've got a lot more seasons left, though, if there's going to be room for this. I got my fingers crossed.
Well, there's room for Roz. What do you think, Micah? Because we haven't got to talk about this yet.
No.
About this not being in the show. This is a big deal.
It was a huge deal, and that's what caused Lady Stoneheart, as many have come to know this character, to trend on Twitter after the finale of Season 3. It's caused a big uproar amongst the fan community when she didn't appear at the end of Season 4. And then I think as we made our way to Season 5, we all just kind of gave up hope. And
yeah.
I think that, you know, there are certain things that can always be left out because they don't necessarily fit the dynamic of the direction of the show. Mm. And this could be one of those instances. Now, I certainly felt, having read this chapter multiple times now, that it's really one of those moments where you get goosebumps. And you, even though you have a character who's being killed, you had a character who has been brought back to life. It's a defining moment. And as was just mentioned, you've had so many Starks who have been killed over the course of these first couple of books that to get one back is powerful. And it sucks. Now, you could go back to the Arya scene where she kills a Frey on the side of the road, right? With the Hound as they're leaving the twins, right? They come along that campsite and who knows, maybe in some way that is the Starks, you know, enacting their vengeance, and getting revenge upon, some of the Freys. Sansa in her role, at least in the show, trying to claim back the North. I would say, has certain elements of Lady Stoneheart to her. You know, there's been a lot of cloaked shots of Sansa.
She sure as hell looks, yeah.
But there was that moment, and I think it was it at the beginning of Season 4, right, when she's sitting with Tyrion, and they mention the fact that Catelyn's body was thrown into the river.
Yeah.
And we all were like, oh shit, it's finally going to have a payoff at the end of the season.
Yeah.
And it didn't.
Well, I just remember saying that's an ominous detail. Like that's a extra detail that we didn't necessarily need to know of violence.
I'm sorry for everyone who's listening that read these books and haven't gotten the reveal and saw it coming. I can understand, Hannah. I mean, of course you made all of the sense, and that's how I feel historically about things that are left out of the story. If they don't fit the approach, the overall end goal of the story that they're telling, it makes total sense to, you know, trim out the stuff that isn't necessary. But to me, leaving A Storm of Swords, such a wonderful part of A Song of Ice and Fire, closing off this first piece, if you will, to leave it with Lady Catelyn returning, I can't help but to think that this is going to mean something.
The North remembers.
The North remembers. This is not fan service. George didn't just throw this in there.
No. He didn't, and there's evidence of that, right, that we get earlier on in this book, which Hannah may or may not have handy.
I do.
From the Ghost of High Heart, right? This was part of her prophecy.
The prophecy says, I dreamt of a roaring river and a woman who was a fish. Dead she drifted with red tears on her cheeks, but when her eyes did open, oh, I woke from terror.
Right.
So this is a thing that we've heard. I like that Kat being the fish from House Tully. Yeah, I think that's a great little piece.
Terror.
There.
Oh gosh, she is no, you do not want to mess with the new Catelyn Stark.
Mm-hmm. And the red tears and how, you know, she clawed at her face and
Can we just talk about how she appears? She could win any tournament right now with no armor, just instilling fear in the hearts of her opponent.
Yeah.
This would be a great Halloween costume.
I'm sure it's been
That's your next one.
Yeah, used. Next year.
Well, now I think, can we just address to the listening audience? We've reached the point now in the podcast. I'm sorry to everyone else. This is fair game. Catelyn Stark is back.
Every chapter leading up to this.
And if it comes later in the show, I suppose we'll just be incredibly enthusiastic about the fact that it made it, and that'll be our excitement, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the Sullied have been having to deal with this entire time. How do we know she's called Lady Stoneheart?
I wondered the same thing.
Spoiler alert.
Okay, yeah. So we gotta wait.
Gotta wait till the next book. I don't think it's unfair. I mean, the name has been thrown around so much.
Yeah, it's not like really a spoiler. But...
So she just gets called that later.
Yeah.
Yep. Going back to the point that you made, Zach, about clearly George R. R. Martin thinks this is important. Otherwise, why even include it in his Storm of Swords as the epilogue? And we just read the quote from The Ghost of High Heart, but one of our listeners over on Facebook, Jennifer Bandel, found a really, really great quote, and it goes all the way back to A Clash of Kings.
Wow.
And she says, "My own for the epilogue goes to foreshadowing, not just to The Ghost of High Heart, but to a much, much earlier taste of things to come." And this is from Catelyn's chapter in A Clash of Kings. "Beside the entrance, the king's armor stood sentry, a suit of forest green plate, its fittings chased with gold, the helm crowned by a great rack of golden antlers. The steel was polished to such a high sheen that she could see her reflection in the breastplate, gazing back at her as if from the bottom of a deep green pond. The face of a drowned woman," Catelyn thought. "Can you drown in grief?"
Man, it's just another moment where it's like, if you've been paying attention, here's a little gift.
Jennifer, you get the own of the episode. At least
the owns.
Well, I don't think we were prepared structurally as a podcast to start talking about. So Catelyn starts back, discuss.
Yeah, well, it's like, again, with the phrase and the plot and the show, like dealing with the aftermath of the Red Wedding is not something that the show has made it to yet. Maybe that's why they haven't had her on the show yet or at all, is we're not seeing on screen, the time is not being made to tell that story of what has happened to the Freys since their alliance with Boltons and the Lannisters have come to pass, or has come to fruition.
So Catelyn is destroyed physically,
yeah,
but alive. She can't speak, and she's rolling around with Arya's old group of friends, the Brotherhood Without Banners. She's going to be an unstoppable force.
Mm-hmm. And I think the fact that she can't speak is almost better.
Yeah,
it heightens the mystique.
Yeah,
it
does. You just have to look at her eyes, and that's enough.
Yes.
It makes her even more intense and terrifying. I also was thinking, this is kind of random, but I think it's interesting that we get this right after we see Lysa get pushed to her death, because I can only imagine her getting to wherever she goes next and realizing that Kat is still out there, and just once again she loses to her sister, and how that makes that moment even worse.
Man.
It makes it even worse.
I was going to make a joke about Peter still choosing Kat over Lysa, but that would be inappropriate to Lysa's memory.
You should make it anyway.
There it is. So this is the secret you were keeping. How does it feel to wash away your worries? just say Lady Stoneheart, Micah. Just say it.
Lady Stoneheart lives. Say what you will about the Starks, but all of them appear to be dead, but really aren't, right? Arya, everybody thinks that she's dead, at least in King's Landing. Then Bran and Rickon, everybody thought that they were dead. Catelyn, everybody thinks that she's dead. Not really. Is Ned alive? Like, I really want to know now.
Well, Ned's in our hearts, and he's in everybody's dreams. And...
Can you imagine? It's like the last chapter of the last book, and it's like Ned Stark.
They bring him back to life, too.
Yeah.
They win Westeros's least good-looking couple award.
Well, everyone might be taken over by White Walkers anyway, so we might as well bring him back.
If you thought this was going to be a happy ending, you haven't been paying attention.
Oh, man.
We're just at a really interesting point in the story in general on both the television show and in the book, just because there's not, I mean, so much is out in the open that we can talk about, and we haven't ever been at that point. And I think that's a really exciting time to be involved in the conversation, because both sides can talk openly and freely about pretty much everything.
I'm interested in how you two feel about this, because this is one of those moments that you get to in the series that, as we've talked about a lot at this point, was not in the show. And you don't know necessarily what direction this is going to take the overall plot in moving forward, knowing that you have Catelyn Stark now teamed up with the Brotherhood Without Banners in the North. What does this all mean?
If they're looking for Arya, if they're looking to reunite the Starks or protect the Starks as part of like a as part of their way about them that Merit sees in this chapter, like, hell yeah, I can do nothing but support and feel super excited for that.
Yeah, there was already so much going on, but to add this and just at the end of A Storm of Swords, I can't imagine the feels between 3 and 4. That's a lot.
Yeah, even though there are two books after this, as a trilogy, like the first three books in this series, guys, holy shit.
Yeah, holy shit.
Absolutely.
And to end it like this, Merritt was being swapped for the body he came to ransom for. I mean, after so many different feelings in this chapter, for it to go there and to get serious so quickly, and then for Catelyn, the person we know was brutally murdered, to come back in the way she did and to nod her head and give his death sentence. This was just, beautiful. This was truly like a note, a beautiful note, a beautiful verse and A Song of Ice and Fire. It was outstanding. And it immediately followed in the book by these wonderful breakdowns of the houses. It did great for me to feel like I was inside of this fantasy epic. And I think about the age I was when I first read Lord of the Rings and similar stories that were so widely built out and sort of in the same world with magic, the Iron Age, etc. But this is something that's available now, and you got to think about the younger kids. Maybe they got their hands on this book, and it's so much more character-driven than many things, and it's so much more approachable than many things, and it's proven by the success of the television series and Georgia's story overall. And I just get excited for them knowing that they've got two books left to be released. They've got TV seasons left to be released and that they can sit down at any time and pick up these books. And at the end of the third book, there's going to be an epilogue like this that would get you excited for the rest of the story. Yeah. It's so cool.
It's funny because when I talk about this podcast, whether it's with coworkers or with friends, you know, I always stress reading the books. Like I can't really understate that. It's just there's something different, you know. It's great to watch the television show, and we all agree that they do an amazing job in adapting this to screen, but there's just something very, very, very special and unique about going through a story like this. And that's why we do this, why we do this podcast. And it's for moments like this. It's for reveals that are this massive that, you know, for whatever reason didn't make it into the television show. And it's that discussion that we are all now able to have with each other and can get excited moving forward as to what this character is going to mean to the overall plot. It's just, it's cool, man.
It's worth putting in the time. It's worth reading thousands of pages.
Oh, absolutely.
Of material, absolutely. Mm-hmm. The payoff is worth it.
I felt like we were riding beside Merit Frey in this chapter.
Yeah.
I felt like
you were the squirrel.
they took the horse away. They took the horse away, and I was like, I hope it's I want to go with it. You know, it's like, I don't want to see what's going to happen to this guy.
You knew he was in trouble, right? I mean,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He knew he was in trouble.
He knew.
God, that dog.
He just wanted a drink to soften it up. But the spacing from the Red Wedding, though, and this was something that I thought a lot about after Lady Stoneheart didn't make it into season 3, was to bring her back at the end of that season would have been way too quick. Because that was, the Red Wedding was which episode?
That was episode 9.
Yeah, episode 9. So you can't kill her in episode 9, bring her back in episode 10. It's not going to work. But when you think about the fact that we read the Red Wedding prior to season 5, you know, in our timeline, and now here we are. But yet, if you go back to even the last two chapters, right, how much discussion was there about Catelyn? John talks about her. Mm-hmm. Lysa talks about her in the Sansa chapter. Mm-hmm. And it's one of Peter's last words in the chapter before we finally turn around. And yet, here we are in the epilogue. And who is it about? Cat.
Only Cat.
Only Cat.
It's so awesome.
Yeah.
That's all. That's all I got to say.
It's awesome. And we're at the point in our podcast now that we've been looking forward to for so long, and I cannot wait to bring you all what we've been planning and thinking and hoping and wishing for just this thing that we do with each other and that the community is a part of. So not that this is at any point the appropriate time to speak about those emotions, but
do we just want to take it in for a second?
Yeah, like, I was just like,
he drew a melancholy air from the strings of his wood harp. Oh. Can you believe that? They're about to kill him and he starts playing just a melancholy tune on his wood harp.
You know what we haven't
Beautiful
brought up?
Scene.
How they planned the red, they're talking about the red wedding plot and how even down to the songs that were going to be played, it was planned like minute by minute. I thought that was interesting.
And he thought it was okay. He said not murder when they're telling him that he murdered. And this is the point where he's getting the noose put around his neck. His voice went shrill. It was vengeance. We had a right to our vengeance. It was war. Aegon, we called him Jingle Bell. A poor lackwit never hurt anyone. Lady Stark cut his throat. We lost 50 men in the camps. Sir Gorse Goodbrook, Kyra's husband, and Sir Tydos, Jared's son. Someone smashed his head in with an axe. Stark's direwolf killed 4 of our wolfhounds and tore the kennel master's arm off his shoulder, even after we'd filled him full of quarrels.
Rock on, Grey Wind.
Go, Grey Wind.
Also, rock on, Nymeria.
Now we know who was coming when Nymeria had to run away.
Mm-hmm.
It was the Brotherhood.
You can't fault her for feeling hatred after hearing him say this, saying it wasn't murder, saying that it was vengeance, because Rob married someone else, not this.
It's a little weak.
I hope that Catelyn Stark and the Brotherhood Without Banners are completely being what outlaws are best at doing during wartime. And at the state of where everything is in the story, this begins to shake things up in the middle of the kingdom.
One other question that I did have coming out of this chapter was, where is Beric Dondarrion? Where is Thoros of Myr? They're not clearly present in this chapter. You know, there's that the Brotherhood joke a little bit, say, oh, it's my turn to be Beric. No, it's my turn to be Beric. And I just wonder, for somebody who you really laid the foundation, the groundwork for what we have come to see at the end of this chapter in somebody being brought back to life, I just wonder. Like, I wonder, you know, what has happened to him? You know, is he somebody who's just kind of passed on into legend, even though we saw him in the flesh? You know, and Thoros, who is the one responsible, we can only think that it was Thoros.
Like a two-person job.
Right.
Who brought Catelyn back.
That's strange, because you would think to bring her back after she had been that dead would have really taken a toll. Because she was pretty dead.
As dead goes. She was pretty far along. I agree. And I think, too, that like it's interesting they're not there to, like, I don't want to say administer care. I mean, if you're dead, how much more dead could you be? But like the idea that they could just not be present, like she doesn't need any kind of supernatural supervision.
They've been kind of historically elusive in this book, though, right? Like, Thoros and Beric have always been sort of doing their own thing. Mystique.
Yeah, they're Mystique, and their band of rebels, they're like the Merry Men, basically, and they're just like, they're better known, not seen. You know, just kind of, because you're just like, what are they up to? Oh, they're setting about some rebels.
We thought that all of our questions would be answered at the end of this episode.
Oh, you still have 2 more books to go.
Yeah.
All right, well.
And then 2 more. There is only one other thing that we all need to do here as a collective unit, and that is give our final owns for A Storm of Swords.
Oh,
this
shit.
Is the last
yes.
chapter yeah. in this book. And as Zach mentioned earlier, we started this book way, way back on the Fist of the First Men with good old Chet. And now here we are in the epilogue with a newly refurbished Lady Catelyn Stark.
She's off leash.
She died somewhere in the middle, and now she's back. And so much has happened in between, and I'm sure we'll get to our owns of the entire book, which I don't even know how you could even think of
don't
doing
know.
That. It's got to be impossible.
This
you need like a top
crazy.
10. Yeah. You need a top 10. You can't just do one. It's impossible.
We've wrapped up a few books on this show before, but it's not going to be anything like this one will be.
But for this chapter, I mean, I the easy own is to just give it to Catelyn Stark.
I don't know.
But in trying to lighten the mood a little bit, I am going to give my own to Wenda the White Fawn, who burned a fawn into the cheek of Merritt Frey's arse when she
branded.
Had him captive.
Mm-hmm.
That's so, a pretty good own. Go.
His wife doesn't like it.
She literally owns him.
Literally.
It's hard not to give your own to just a whole chapter. So this is difficult. But I wanted to give my own to, there's this moment when Merritt is walking and he says, his head was throbbing like that bloody drum they'd played at the wedding. And I think that sets such a great tone. You know, his head is pounding. He can almost hear the drums. And it's, as the tension's building, I think it's a great little background moment as he's walking to his death.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my not so obvious own.
I will also give my own to Merritt. I wanted to give it to Grey Wind, but then I reminded myself of this line. Merritt, who's not the perfect knight, actually he's not a knight, he's not the perfect human being, he's got his issues, is walking in to the halls and he says, "Get off there, you're sitting on a king." Just sort of this is you're disrespecting the past thing. And it's just like, it's so ironic at that moment. And he does not, again, this guy, poor guy, does not know what he's in for. He thinks he's going to win back the affection of his father after he successfully returns Peter Pimple to the twins after paying a whole bag of gold that he didn't spend on booze to get him back. And he thinks he's going to be victorious and everything's going to work out. But in general, he's just like, oh yeah, don't disrespect the dead. And then the dead come back and kill him. So own for that.
Whoa. See, and that, I think, perfectly sets up my own, which is to George R. R. Martin for writing a chapter that I feel has reiterated several, if not all, of the several many, many, many points that A Song of Ice and Fire has told throughout these three books so far, which have a lot of narrative on the nature of life and relationships and bravery. And we'll say courage, even to be redundant, and camaraderie and compassion. And the list literally goes on and on. And I felt the gamut of those points and emotions in different ways. He inserted them into this chapter. I thought that the narrative was unbelievable. I even made Eric give his own to a point of view character, so you know it's good.
Well, is it a point of view character? It doesn't say Merritt at the beginning. It says epilogue.
Well, whose chapter is it then?
Merritt still was thinking of the future and about how if he rescued Peter, he could possibly be rescuing the eventual lord of the twins. It's just,
oh,
it's rich.
Gosh.
There is so much about motivation and about what desire creates the actual actions that fuels what becomes motivation.
Yep.
And at the end of it all, someone can come back like Catelyn Stark and stare into your eyes and decide that you should die. And that's the world that we're living in. And I cannot wait, guys, to get into the next few books.
I don't think we have often done obituaries for characters who have died, but I love this Merritt character, and it happens in such proximity to the family tree that I just have to say that poor Merritt Frey is survived by his wife, Maria Derry, his daughter, Mary, called Amy, Walda, and Marissa, who's just a maid of 13, and his son, Walder, little Walder, is 7.
As we end the A Storm of Swords, though, I do feel the balance shifting, and it's something we talked about on the show, right? That season after season, we always felt as if the Lannisters were on top and that they were in control. And as you near the end of this book, especially with what happens to Tywin and Tyrion's escape, you get the sense that that is no longer the case. And I think that as we leave this book and head into A Feast for Crows, certainly now with what has just happened to two Freys, you're starting to think that things are starting to go back in the opposite direction, maybe go in a completely new direction. I go into this next story not feeling as confident about the Lannisters as I did before.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, just Tywin being removed from the board is a huge blow to the family, and I know we've had the pleasure of speaking about that because of the show and the scene. Even
and Joffrey,
in the
too. Let's not forget about him.
Yeah, and Joffrey.
So, of course, we did get a number of owns. This was like doing a episode during the season. There were that many owns that we received across Facebook, Twitter, email. It was just unbelievable to see the response that we got. We know that listeners are extremely excited about us finally getting to this chapter, finally getting to this reveal, and they did not disappoint.
You've done us a solid. You've stuck with us this long, and you get to enjoy as much as we do reading them.
It's been a long journey now that we've reached this point. Will you stick with us to the end?
On Facebook, Mark Mahal, I dreamt of a roaring river and a woman that was a fish. Dead she drifted with red tears on her cheeks, but when her eyes did open, oh, I woke from terror. Just like last week, owned to the ghost of High Heart, I love seeing prophecy come true.
Our small council member, Simon Amundsen, wrote, owned to the future of the Freys. When Lord Walder dies, it will be every Frey for himself, Merritt says. Many will be turned out. How will the ousted Freys live who have no use to the new Lord of the Crossing? Outside the safety of the Twins, a life can be hard on a Frey, the most hated house in Westeros. What life can they hope to find outside the Twins? A hard life, never trusted, always hated, even hunted. Maybe we will see an exodus of ousted Freys from the Twins to the Wall. Maybe that will be the only refuge and place for them to survive the complete loathing from the rest of Westeros. They always said that Lord Walder could field an army out of his own breaches. Why not for the Night's Watch? Would it redeem House Frey if they stood side by side on the Wall, fighting the others in the battle for the Dawn?
Only time will tell.
It might, Simon.
Allison Bianchi says, own to George on this one for the theme throughout the series of magic returning to the world. This epilogue for me was a culmination of that super slow burn and the horror I felt when I realized what was happening was so deep and so well earned that I had to just smile and stand in awe. It remains one of the best experiences I've ever had reading a book. Bravo, Mr. Martin.
Stephanie Elaine Circo on Facebook. I've been waiting for you guys to get to this. When I first read this, I was so excited. My introduction to the series was when my boyfriend showed me The Reigns of Castamere after it aired. Then I was told they were books. After that, I read the books and have become addicted to it. I am currently on my fifth reread and have read all the books related to this world and can't get enough. Your podcast is great. I found it one day in April on Watchers on the Wall. I kept seeing it and was like, what the hell is this thing I keep seeing? Then I listened to it and loved it. My own goes to the squirrel that scared the shit out of Merritt. Outlaws don't have tails. Hashtag the North remembers. Hashtag Lady Stoneheart. Hashtag badass squirrel.
Badass squirrel. On Twitter, we heard from Peach at Lady... No, fuck that. On Twitter, we heard from Peach from Mario, who says, I finally caught up. Love the podcast, by the way, guys. Thanks for a great job. I give my own to... Wait for it. The squirrel.
Hey!
Hashtag badass squirrel.
Badass squirrel.
Brienne of Tarth. My own for the epilogue goes to the epilogue itself for owning the pants off the unsuspecting reader. Hashtag circular reasoning. Flying back to Facebook, Ivana Svetanovic says, we all love the revelation of undead Catelyn, but I'm going to honor a few other people who owned poor Merritt Frey. One is Wenda the White Fawn, member of the Kingswood Brotherhood, who captured him, burned her trademark fawn on his butt, and screwed up his career many years ago. Sounds like a badass lady.
It does.
The other own goes to Tom of Seven Streams and Lem the Lemon Cloak for their strict adherence to the meaning of the words. If they weren't outlaws, they could be lawyers. Tom, all you need to do is answer me a question, and I'll tell them to let you go. Later, no, Merritt squealed loudly. No, don't. I gave you your answer. You said you'd let me go. Seems to me that what I said was I'd tell them to let you go. The singer looked at Yellowcloak. Lem, let him go. Go bugger yourself, the big outlaw replied brusquely. The singer gave Merritt a helpless shrug and began to play The Day They Hanged Black Robin.
Ominous.
Honorary own goes to Sandor Clegane. for being responsible for most high-ranking Frey casualties at the Red Wedding. Sir Garse Goodbrook, Kira's husband, and Sir Tytos, Jared's son. Someone smashed his head in with an axe.
It took them.
Owns from Jen Calhoun over on Twitter are as follows. Own to the Brotherhood Without Banners for proving again they're the coolest dudes in Westeros. Totally would join their ranks. And secondary own to George for this mic drop at the end of A Storm of Swords. Can't imagine what it would have been like to wait years for book four. And on Facebook, Cameron Ross says, my own for the epilogue has to go to the Red God. Even though it's not his saying, it holds true, quote, what is dead may never die, but rises again harder and stronger. This could hold to the idea that there isn't many gods, but just one with many faces and aspects. I am happy to welcome Lady Stoneheart into the fray. Hashtag, the only good fray is a dead fray. Hashtag, cat got your throat.
Ooh. Ouch. Two parts rye. Oh, yeah. Lady Catelyn needs to own a makeover. Being an undead creature of vengeance is no excuse for not having your shit together. Attaboy. Susie Q. My own goes to Nymeria for even making the epilogue possible. Can't wait to listen to you all dissect this thoroughly. Back to Facebook, Sarah Ditcher writes, my own goes to me for finally catching up with the podcast. Just kidding. Actually, my first ever own goes to Lady Stoneheart. Her first ever own is for Lady Stoneheart.
That's awesome,
Sarah. Good luck topping that.
Who owns in all her zombie face glory. I can still remember exactly what I was doing and feeling when I first read this chapter, and rereading it is such a visceral experience. I'm goosebumpy all over. Love to all you goo beauties from Sarah, listening in Essex, England. Kiss. Hashtag first time owner. Hashtag British listener. Hashtag LSH, which is Lady Stoneheart, ladies and gentlemen. Hashtag zombie cat.
Wow, how do you top that?
I know.
I have no idea.
Emily Bryce on Facebook says, my own is to LSH, Lady Stoneheart. And to all of you wonderful people who I get to share this moment with. I have read the books along with you for the first time, and this blew my mind. I cannot wait to hear the discussion. Rachel Jenkins says, Lady S owns the chills. Reese Palazzo says, my own goes to Lady Stoneheart. How could it not? I actually had to reread that paragraph just to make sure I had read it correctly. It's not often that I get a jaw-dropping WTF. How cool is this moment for a book? But this is one of them.
It is.
Yeah, it is.
Angie Rank says, I can't wait to hear you guys' reactions. My own goes to Lady Stoneheart, of course. This chapter blew my mind when I first read it. It's one of the best twists I've ever read, and I read a ton. All hail George R. R. Martin. Karen Danger Dean took a little bit of a different twist and says, anti-own to Dave and Dan for skipping one of the most badass plot lines in the entire series. Love those guys, but come on, this is game changing. Matthew tweeted in, the White Fawn literally owns Merit Frey after branding him.
She did.
Gwenda's getting a lot of love in this,
she
this
should.
Section. And, well, Eric, I'll do it for you, I guess.
Thank you, Micah, for biting
Henny
this.
Henny Khalifi. Gotta be close enough. Own goes to you guys for finishing my favorite book. Had a blast listening. Let Eric read this. Love how he mispronounces my name.
Eric, say his name. Do it.
Have I mispronounced Henny?
I know that you've called him Henry. There's that.
Oh, well, that's simply the N looks a little bit like an R.
From this angle.
Except it goes a little longer than it normally. When I write it in print, and I often do print hand print owns, to be read on the show in my notes, my R looks a lot like an N, so I apologize, Henry. And thank you, Micah, for taking that for me. Heathen on Twitter, my own this week goes to Cat. Only Cat.
Only Cat.
Perfect.
That's fair. Mo at BookaDreamer1, I'm so happy you guys finally finished. I can't wait to hear your reactions. Longtime listener / lurker.
Welcome.
On Facebook, Esther Banks, my own goes to me for being able to keep quiet about this epilogue around all of my unsullied friends. And similarly, Ariadna Quiano says, "My own goes to Micah for keeping the big secret this long, and to Nymeria, thanks to whom this was possible."
Scott Trende on Facebook. "My own goes to Lady Stoneheart." I just can't say that name enough. "And the Brotherhood. Keep hanging those frays." Phil Riley, first time own here. Another one. "I'm going to give it to Tom Seven Strings for tricking that poor fray with the fine print. I told you I'd tell them to let you go." Pluisa, "And this emotion was certainly, certainly mine. As it happens, you're wrong there." The singer turned to the hooded woman. "Milady." I still gasp after even the third read.
Nice.
Brad Beecher on Facebook says, "Own to Old Stones for being a popular fray hangout. But will the real Beric Dondarrion please stand up?"
I repeat.
The real Beric Dondarrion, please stand up.
Over on Twitter, Special J says, "The own has to go to George for fitting one final WTF into a storm of swords, just when you think things are calming down." And Brad is back like you forgot something on Twitter.
At Biggie Smalls.
I love your Twitter handle, Brad. Biggie Smalls says, "Own to Grey Wind, who is said to have killed 4 wolfhounds and tore the kennel master's arm off at the Red Wedding. Hashtag dire times. Hashtag dire measures. Hashtag dire wolf.
Dire wolf.
Hashtag I love Brad."
Todd Oakes tweets in to say, "Valar Morghulis watchers, my own for the epilogue goes to the White Fawn for giving Merrit Frey a lifelong excuse to drink." Matthew Morilla at Voldy Off the Wall says, "My own goes to the great John. He outdrank everyone and still managed to crack a few skulls. Now he just needs to escape."
Yeah,
down your hair.
Back over on Facebook, Jose Quintero, "Lady Stoneheart will be in season 6, so own to David and Dan for making us wait for this epic scene." Crossing fingers. We all hope so, Jose. And David Hodgman, "Own to George for blowing my mind the first time I read this. What an amazing ending to this book."
Daniela Harker, "Finally, you guys made it. And Micah can breathe." Micah, breathe. Just breathe.
Breathe.
"And share the secret. Own to the White Fawn for the brand she burnt into Merritt's arse. And own to the North for it remembers. Just like Lady Stoneheart. Hashtag Frey's gonna fray.
Frey's gonna fry.
Oh, well, I'm just hearing Frey's gonna fray, fray.
Fray, 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 fray. And a Frey's gonna fray. And a cat's gonna hate.
Should we start a band or something?
I think we should.
I think we should.
I think you might know our first song, Hannah. Read the next one.
Frayed off.
Our headliner hit, Heather Brechtholt on Facebook. "I laughed about this for 30 minutes. I don't know if anybody knows the song. Zach didn't know it. Micah did. Eric, I don't know your reaction."
Nope.
But there's
don't
a
know
song
it.
From elementary school. Should I sing it? It goes, "The cat came back the very next day. Oh, the cat came back. We thought it was a goner." And she put that on Facebook and I thought it was hilarious. So, "The cat came back."
It's hard to beat that.
Well done, Heather. Well done.
Well done.
Thank you, Heather, for that.
Well, that felt different. The last owns of A Storm of Swords.
As we begin to move on, we can't move too far because, as we said, you didn't disappoint this week with your owns, and even a few, a handful, made it to our inbox at contact@gameofowns.com. So we're going to read first from Trisha L. "My own for the epic log goes to Micah. Although, oh, nice job, Micah. You got an own. Although I'm one of the few who are happy Lady Stoneheart has been left out of the show, at least so far. I know Micah feels otherwise, and he's done a tremendous job, yes, in keeping this secret from Zach and Eric all of these years. Can't wait to hear their reactions this week. Thanks, guys. Trisha L."
Micah, you're collecting owns.
I know. I'm putting them up on my cork board over here, like printing them out since they're emails and just
like little trophies.
Maybe we could buy our own camel one day. Nick Hartley writes in, "My own for the epilogue goes to Arya and Nymeria for unknowingly working together to pull out Catelyn's body from the water. Though not in the way she wanted to, Arya did in fact save her mother's life." Aww. Nick Hartley does not so.
No, he doesn't.
He adds, "This is the second time I've read A Storm of Swords, and I couldn't have had more fun doing the reread with the Goo Crew. The format really slows your pace down, and it allows to get into all the little details George wrote. I can't wait to start on A Feast for Crows." Mm-hmm. It was a fun ride, Nick. It was fun.
Yeah. I cannot wait either. And neither can Susan Stacy, who says, "Dear Goo, your enthusiasm over the last week's chapters was contagious. I had a couple of comments I wanted to share as a result. As far as describing the first three books as part one or act one of A Song of Ice and Fire, I think you have evidence in the fact that A Storm of Swords is the first book with an epilogue. The next book with an epilogue is A Dance with Dragons, which shows that books four and five can be considered part two."
I'm obsessed with this. Keep going.
"In that final Sansa chapter, there are a lot of reveals about Littlefinger. This is a most deceptive man. What I find ironic is that people, for example Tyrion, think Littlefinger is boldly lying about deflowering both Catelyn and Lysa. But we learn in that chapter that Littlefinger was incredibly drunk when Lysa first went to his bed, and that he called her Catelyn. I believe Littlefinger truly believes he slept with Catelyn, which would have allowed Littlefinger to think their relationship was greater than it ever was. I can't wait to hear you all discuss the epilogue and your plans after that. Susan."
That theory there, that Littlefinger thinks he actually slept with Catelyn, that's an interesting realization, I think.
That would explain a lot of his obsession with her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I don't know really what to say at this point, because we've reached the end of A Storm of Swords. We've just gone through an unbelievable set of owns that were sent in by the listeners. And we still have two books in front of us that have been published. There's two more after that.
This is a great moment for the podcast. And to call back to Susan Stacy's email and referencing, and we've spoken about it over the past few weeks, these first three books feeling as if it were the first part. We are now over 308 episodes in, from live shows at events as large as New York Comic Con to more intimate gatherings in different cities. Just the entire journey through 300 plus episodes of our podcast, and now reaching this moment at the end of A Storm of Swords and experiencing the kind of interaction that we're experiencing right now, the kinds of feedback, that wave of owns that you sent us. This just excellent, big deal for us recording this episode. There's a lot of feels right now. I can't help but to think that we've reached a point in the podcast's life and in our relationship with the community where I think act one is over and act two is only just beginning.
I mean, it's just so exciting how much we have in front of us. We've finished three books and we've got,
oh yeah,
we have so much time ahead of us to play in this world, and I'm excited.
If you have any other lingering thoughts about this epilogue, about Lady Stoneheart, about A Storm of Swords, feel free to tweet at us at Game of Owns, or scroll upon our Facebook wall at facebook.com/Game of Owns, or send us an email. As Eric mentioned earlier, contact@gameofowns.com is the way that you can do that. You can also head on over to iTunes if you like what we've had to say here, if we haven't spoiled you too much, and leave us a 5-star rate and review. Nothing less than 5 stars is acceptable here in the month of December, or we will make you march the path to Old Stones, and who knows what awaits you there.
First Lady Stoneheart.
The threats are back.
Interesting fact here. I was talking to somebody at our holiday party, and they had heard that I'd do a Game of Thrones podcast, and so they searched it on their phone at the holiday party, and they immediately noted the fact that all they had to type in was game, and it popped right up, and that it was rated 5 stars. So that's kudos to all of you listeners out there who have gone and rated the show 5 stars. We really appreciate it. As we've said countless times, it is a way for other people, much like that person at the holiday party, to find out that we do exist. Just thank you for continuing to support our show now year after year after year.
Thank you.
Micah's go-to party trick is search.
I'm on iTunes, 5 stars.
Look at my podcast on iTunes.
Micah mentioned that leaving us a review supports, helps our show, helps us out, helps people find us. There is, of course, another way that you can ensure that Game of Owns, a podcast that we love, a podcast that you love, is able to continue to produce the content ad-free to do what we do, and that is our Patreon, which is patreon.com/goo. We have extra bonus content that's released of special extra conversations. Also, not to mention, considering we were just talking about all the ways you can communicate with us, streamlined communication and the types of conversations that we have with our small council regularly, the types of messages that we post on our Patreon exclusive board and sort of engagement questions prior to our chapters that help us formulate our discussion. All of that takes place over on Patreon. Definitely check it out. Once again, patreon.com/goo.
We really can't thank you enough. I know before we recorded this episode, I tried to keep my mind away from owns, and that was really difficult to do, especially because this was such a huge moment and so many of you wrote in to share in this experience. And I can honestly say that your feedback made this experience more special. This was already slated to be an excellent moment for the podcast moving forward and moving toward this next act. But your feedback, your interest, and your passion sort of bleeds out on us. And it absolutely, certainly, positively made this experience more special. So thank you for listening and continuing to be a part of what we're building, and for telling your friends and for telling your family members during special events. This is the holiday season.
And holiday parties.
And holiday parties, after all. So we welcome you into our family week after week and promise you this. You're looking for answers. Some of you have listened to our podcast for years and are dedicated in this story along with the story of Ice and Fire. And what we can say is that answers are coming. There is a show ahead of us. Mm-hmm. And there's lots and lots of excitement. And because of you, that excitement is real and it's palpable and it's building this into something that can be very, very special. So continue to listen. We will finish our discussion. We will look at A Storm of Swords. And then from there,
I'm excited. We'll I really am, because as I look ahead to what lies beyond the Storm of Swords, it is such a different direction for this series. I mean, we saw some of it in the show, but you know, not to go too far ahead, but Eric, a lot of Greyjoy action.
Yes.
A lot of Dorne, a lot of new point of view characters. So I'm really excited, Zach, as you mentioned, to, you know, put a nice little bow around A Storm of Swords, but then move on and really continue this journey that we all started together several years ago.
I gotta say, I look forward to the prospect of new characters, because here we got a great chapter of Merit, a man we knew very little about, and now leaving him in one chapter, the same chapter, I just feel like I've known him all of my life. Certainly all of his. And so I'm looking forward to new characters, because if they're handled with any, even half of the degree of deftness that George has masterworked this epilogue, then they will bring about some very interesting new storylines that we know from the show are coming, but also have the potential, just like everything else, to be greater.
We have so much left.